You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Welcome to our ADIS podcast episode, which was funded by an educational grant from ASI. I'm delighted to say that we're rejoined today by experts Dr. Philippa Vanyi and Dr. Victor Grunval. Here they'll discuss the first-line treatment for metastatic renal cell carcinoma, where they'll draw on their experiences on how to manage patients safely and choose the best treatments for them. So thank you again for your time here, but just for any listeners who may be new to our podcasts, could you briefly give us an introduction of yourselves?
Yeah, thank you, Lydia. So my name is Philippa Vanyi. I'm working as a medical oncologist here in the Comprehensive Cancer Center in Hanover in the north of Germany. And of course, one of our main focus is genitourinary cancer as well, in particular kidney cancer.
I'm Victor Grunwald. I'm a medical oncologist by training, and I do specialize for GU cancer therapies, for medical therapies in particular. I'm happy to talk about kidney cancer. I think it's a great topic.
Right, it is a great topic, and then we are diving already in the great topic. I'm referring also to the other podcast which we did, where we talked about different options. And now let's focus, Victor, on a different topic. And once we're reaching strong therapies, overall survival benefit, most of the time it goes along very often with toxicity, and management is mandatory. So is there a general recommendation, once a colleague is, you know, having a new clinical experience, how you could think about management, what part you have to be aware of? Do you have any scheme? What kinds you have to focus on?
Yeah, you have to have some sort of management, because with the advent of targeted therapies, we expose our patients to continuous treatment, to chronic toxicity. And I think that's different from chemotherapy. I think that's something that we have learned in the past 15 years or so. And I think something that is important is to counsel patients. So what can be avoided was important. What can be done as a preventive measure? What are stop signs? You know, where should I contact the site in order to get help? I think these are, I mean, in essence, very few things that are quite important for me when it comes to targeted therapies.
Right, in particular. And we discussed also the topic about PD-1 and TKI therapy. And there's a new phenomenon, if you ask me. We also are concerned about the follow-up, in particular, once we are using immune checkpoint inhibition. It demands the team, as also the healthcare providers in general, as well as the patient, to focus in particular on the follow-up once the toxicity have happened. And there we are now focusing already on one of the main challenges which we have to learn in the recent past, is how to deal with the toxicity of PD-1 TKI combo therapies. In particular, they do have a kind of overlap. And I think one smart approach, and I'm not sure about you, Victor, is dissecting the toxicity according to each substance. And would you agree if I go to a concept where I say, forward to the data from the TKIs? We have had also on the Congress good data presentation. And would it be fair if I characterize TKI toxicity mainly by diarrhea, in particular for the VEGF and highly potent inhibitors, hypertension, liver toxicity in terms of AST, ALT elevation, as well as fatigue? Would you follow and say, well, this is even you, if you use a combination therapy, one of the most frequent AEs of those therapies?
Yes, indeed. There are different types of toxicities. I mean, some of them are not being recognized by patients, such as hypertension, you know, until, you know, if it's very high, patients usually, if you don't measure, you don't know. And then, yeah, and then there are some that are really bothering patients. That could be diarrhea, that could be fatigue. And I think it is driven by mucocutaneous toxicities. So anywhere in the mucosa and the skin that really is bothering patients. So there could be hand foot syndrome, for instance, diarrhea, yeah, but also stomatitis. I think these are things that are really impeding with quality of life in patients.
Right. And do you think we have data from some TKIs? What about the occurrence over time of TKI toxicity? And you very often see early on setting of those kind of toxicities, and often they are quite constant in each patient. And I think there's also a time pattern which is a little bit different from PD-1 or checkpoint inhibition toxicity. Would you agree? Or do you think we should not, you know, overjudge the data we have?
Yeah, so I think TKI gives you chronic toxicity because you have to take the pill every day, basically. I mean, some of them may have some breaks in between, but at the end of the day, it's chronic exposure. And when you look into the data, what you do see that the reporting over time becomes less frequent. So, you know, there's a decrease in grade 3-4 over time, or grade 2 diarrhea, for instance. I think that relates to therapy management. That also includes dose adjustments and things that we do in order to keep patients on therapy. And honestly, I mean, the best patients, those that have the highest impact from treatment, having best results, they're being exposed, you know, even longer than others. And so you really have to find a way to deal with the chronic toxicity that comes from tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
Also, the checkpoint inhibitors are mostly given for a long time once it works from the oncological side very well. Do you think there are, according to the kinetics, we have the data from melanoma, in particular for PD-1, that it pops up around week 12 of therapy? Is this a relevant data which you see in clinical day life at median?
Well, I think with any therapy, I think kidney cancer, the first 3 months are key in order to get patients on treatment, to see what is the toxicity, you know, how does it look like, how does it impact patients' quality of life, do we have to dose reduce, and I think that's quite important, and that's also true for immunotherapies. You know, it comes in delayed, it has a gap, and after a couple of weeks, you would see the full spectrum of toxicity. But generally speaking, I think the first 3 or 4 months are also for immunotherapy the relevant ones when it comes to toxicity. So we speak about early acute toxicity, but how do you feel about immune-related toxicities that are coming in late? I mean, is that something of concern?
Good question. A really good question. I mean, if you look to the story of checkpoint inhibition, which all starts up also in cardiomyocytes and mice models, there are some concerns from the cardiology sides about cardiac toxicity. But if you look to the data, I didn't follow the topic at all recently, but I'm not really concerned about long-term toxicity, right? The probability, if once the patient is on treatment, I guess what we can see from the data on the long run, after they manage the first period, the probability of REs is always nearly the same. But I don't think there are any data, correct me, about really long-term toxicity itself, right, or cumulative toxicity.
Yeah, I what I had in mind is that, let's say you start off a treatment and a patient is 1 year on treatment and did not have any side effects. You know, it does not prevent
Very important. Right.
It is a low chance, you know, it's less than 10% certainly, but it still may occur. You're 18 months on therapy and then you have grade 3 diarrhea that comes from treatment. So it's something that needs to be considered and that is different from the tablets.
Absolutely, yeah. This is a very important point that even though it runs very well, recently it happens also to one of my patients for, let's say, 1.5 years, all of a sudden, nothing happened before, he really has had severe adverse event, and you need to be patient about this, right? So now we summarized a little bit the toxicity of each pattern. I guess this is key once you are being aware using the therapy of each of the pattern, and this helps you to distinguish in clinical day life a little bit by chance from which agent, if you're using combinations, comes which toxicity. Would you agree? If you know a lot about each of them.
Yes, basically there are some that are very distinctive and that are very specific for a given therapy. And then there is the group where it's overlap. So I think like pruritus or hypertension, I mean, they relate to immunotherapy or TKIs. And then fatigue is a problem. Diarrhea is a problem. What about hepatitis if you do TKI-IO therapies? Both components may contribute to the type of toxicity that we see.
Right. So, and would you agree, my first thing, once I'm doing a PD-1 TKI combination, which I'm really concerned of, or which reaches at least a level of CTC grade 2 toxicity, I'm pausing both substances. Would you agree with this general approach as rule of the thumb, or would you do a different approach?
Or it depends on the toxicity that you see. So we just recently had a patient that had grade 4 toxicity, so grade 4 hepatitis within a trial. So we had to stop therapy with both agents. Okay. And if it has that magnitude, I also consider steroids at the same time of occurrence. Mm. If that is grade 2, I mean, that gives you some time to play around. That means that there's only liver enzymes being elevated without any bilirubin. I think that that is something fair to say that you don't necessarily have to stop both agents. Mm. And on top of that, the immunoagent, they have a very long half-life. So even if you don't do the infusion, there's still sufficient antibody in the system in order to maintain the immune response. I'm less convinced that you necessarily have to withhold both agents every time, but it helps to understand, you know, what is the driving force behind the toxicity.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it helps to understand the situation most of the time. And let's go to last point. We have plenty of reviews about how to manage IO combinations, right? And they focus only, of course, on the IO. They are not focusing on the TKI. Do you think we always call them in Germany also stoplight systems, because they gives you green, red, and yellow, and some hints what you should do, either continuing the therapy, either initiating diagnostic or steroids. And do you think we simply can follow the guidelines according to checkpoint inhibition also for the PD-1 TKI combinations?
With some deviations, I would say, because I think the toxicity that comes from the immune component is probably more dangerous. You know, it has more impact. And if you miss the time point to treat properly, so meaning using corticosteroids, that becomes more challenging and it could be lethal to patients. So I think that that's the critical point about the immuno component. That's why we're so keen on recommend all those adverse event managements, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it is. But I mean, you have to be fair. You said it could be lethal. We have to be honest. Also, TKI is not an easygoing substance. We have meta-analyzers which underline that they are also increasing the mortality and morbidity by itself, right? So it's also not the easygoing targeted agent like imatinib in CMA, for example. They are also potent and toxic drugs, which also can cause harm, first instance on cardiotoxicity. But let's go back to one last question from my side. When I'm looking all over all the reviews and expert opinions, right, following the protocol guidelines, and we don't have fairly randomized prospective trial in the majority of cases about toxicity management. My personal experience is whenever a situation, in particular for IO, whenever a situation is really unclear, don't waste too much time with diagnostics. Start treatment, yeah, right? Yeah. In particular with steroids. Once you're thinking about consulting the endocrinologist, which you definitely need in some situations, in the beginning, I always lost in differential diagnostics. And this means, first of all, would you agree, start any concern, start steroids. And second of all, I also learned sometimes it's only a worse or going worse of cancer, the underlying disease, which is causing weird situations. Yes. And once we are following those guidelines, we are always losing this point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not always toxicity. It could be the disease itself, and you're just not successful with your treatment. I mean, that's one thing to consider. The second thing is, as you said, if you're in doubt, you should use steroids, because many times immunotherapy can give you adverse events that are not captured by the side effect or supportive guidelines. And you know, you may miss the point, and you just miss the window of opportunity to treat the patient. I mean, a very good example is one of my patients. I mean, he had an immunocomponent. It was even single agent immuno, and he was hospitalized for a stroke, actually, which he did not had, but he was been treated accordingly. And one day it was the right side, and then 2 days after was, you know, right side improved. Left side started with hemiplegia. So, you know, we started doing corticosteroids and improved at the end of the day. So, but you can spend a lot of time doing diagnostics, and some of them need to be done. You have to be certain that it's not a different disease that you just don't capture. But you should not wait because, you know, some of the rare adverse events, patients are just having poor outcome because they are not being treated properly with corticosteroids. And there's also data. I mean, just I'm not just start talking and talking. Don't I? I mean, there's data for, let's say, in the beginning, hepatitis has been subject for biopsies to liver biopsies, which is okay. Yeah. I mean, you need to understand what is the driving force. Yeah. But there was a paper suggesting that if you go for diagnostic procedures, you go for biopsies, you just delay appropriate treatment, and you will have poorer outcome with that. I mean, you know, then after, I don't know, a couple of weeks time, what is the cause of this? You missed the point, which is treatment, you know. Right. And I think that that's the danger about having weird side effects from immunotherapy.
Right. So we can summarize this point as, let's say, if in doubt, steroid it out, right? If it makes sense to say like this. Now, thanks again for this nice talk. So I think what we can summarize, what we both learned with the evolution of the therapy, every potent therapy, unfortunately, still nowadays does have harm potential. It might be toxic, but we have to learn about the toxicity. We have to learn how to discover, and we have to try to memorize and to analyze the characteristics of each of the toxicity and how to do the appropriate management. And sometimes, in particular, once we're using IO, don't lose too much time with diagnostics. Steroid is not that harmful, at least in the short run, and you also can stop it in doubt. And so thank you again having you here and having this great discussion with you, Victor.
Thank you, Philip. It was a great topic.
Thank you both. That was fantastic.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.